We're back with Dr. Frederick Foray, Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon. You are known for many, many things. I got acquainted with you through your three extraordinary works, Being and Value, which is metaphysics, Knowing and Value, which is epistemology, about knowledge, Living and Value, which is about ethics, all of them set in a constructive postmodern context. Bill Russell?
That's very interesting. We have a colleague who's an environmentalist, Carl Henning Robert, who in trying to deal with environmental issues talks about something he calls backcasting.
Oh.
It's not a novel idea. There are other manifestations of it. The basic idea is to put yourself in the place that you want to be. And then from that position, turn around and look back.
And figure out how to get there.
And then chart the path that will get you there. The constructivist part of this seems appropriate to that. But I raise that in this context with what Paula said, because we view this as a series of ongoing conversations, of which this is the first. And I want to invite you or invite us to think about philosophy, the world today, as best we understand those two things. You're in charge of both. and perhaps do a little Carl Henrik Robert backcasting. If we were successful in, where do we want to be 10 years from now, 20 years from now? Because so much of what you're doing is vital. It is understanding who we are in the context. It is having the will and the imagination to deal with serious challenges. It's having the imagination to live fully, richly, beautifully. To walk in beauty, as the Navajo would say it. One of the things that I hope to be able to accomplish in these conversations is to help us move down this path. This is not an academic exercise. This is not even a history exercise. Mm-hmm. This is a matter of how we live our lives and living our lives more richly and more fully. All of which is sort of a setup for saying, do you have a sense? Do you when you're got your shoes off, sitting under the tree, thinking great thoughts, waiting for an apple to fall on your head, or whatever, to mix metaphors. Do you have a sense of from your perspective, not so much the specific conditions, but the ambience of what this a more functional, a more beautiful world would look like?
Society, the global. I would begin with the global society, because after all, trying to think in terms of radical contextualism, you want to think at least in terms of the entire globe, which means that one of the things, if we start backcasting, it would mean we have to backcast from 100 years ahead, because the things I'm going to talk about are really not the things we could accomplish in 20 years or maybe even 100, but surely if we do start to backcast, one of the things we have to anticipate the future to be like would be much less unequal, much more equitable in terms of the distribution for human need of the wherewithal for beauty. I mean, at least the minimum standards of a humane and beautiful life.
It would be ugly to be dying of hunger and poverty.
This would be very ugly, and it's now ugly, and disease and so on. These are some of the primary conditions of a genuinely beautiful postmodern future, that is this redistribution of the goods that make up the possibility of a humane and beautiful life.
So equality, which is fairly deeply rooted in the Western tradition as an idea, has yet to be fully explored.
At least, if not equality, at least fairness.
Fairness.
Within the limits of, I'm not looking for a radically egalitarian world in which everybody fed out of the same rice bowl. but rather that nobody fall below a certain level of human dignity. And let the stratosphere be as high as it would like to be, as long as the stratosphere is contributing enough to the rest of the world.
And it is more than just humans. If humans were to be all of these things and we've destroyed the planet, that doesn't work for you, does it?
No, that doesn't work very well. No, I really think that talk about fairness, it means multi-species fairness. And that is something that humans are especially responsible for, because as far as we know, only humans really are able to anticipate the long-term future. Only humans are able to think in terms of moderating their behavior, not according to their maximized self-interest, but in order to maximize the interest of the whole. Now, humans are able to do that. We don't very often, but at least we know we can. And that, in my ethics, we should. So that would be, maybe the first step would be to picture a world that is less divided, less unequal, and certainly not at war. Certainly, if some of these necessary conditions were provided, wars of resource wouldn't be necessary and might not occur. And that would mean we'd need a different type of political leadership as well, who would be concerned for the well-being of wholes rather than simply for one's own class and type.
So is fairness enough?
Well, fairness and goodness building, that's the other big clue, because it may well be that not just distribution, but absolute increase of the good might be possible, especially if one understood good not to be something that required unreplaceable resources. There are other kinds of goods in the world than just the use of unreplaceable resources.
Like?
And those are the humane goods of, say, discovering art, discovering one's talent in dance, creating wonderful music. These are no more energy intensive than, what should I say? I shouldn't have started there, no more. They're not energy intensive. And you can create better music for the same amount of energy that you create worse music.
And you don't have to go to the Neiman Marcus to buy it.
No, you certainly don't. You do it in your with your shoes off under the tree.
Well, when you start... When you talk about the allocation of resources, people, I think, instantly jump to economics, and certainly that is not irrelevant. But the resource that we all have in any living entity is time.
And some amount of energy.
It's finite. It's going to run out on us.
Yes.
If you're Buddhist, you think you get another shot. If you're not, you know, there are lots of different perspectives on it. But as an individual living right now, and as a community living, time is an essential part of that. And I say that because one of the, you know, to the extent that time is a resource, people who spend all day, every day doing work that is not fulfilling are also in, are suffering a resource misallocation.
They are, yeah.
So that we're not just talking about poverty and hunger.
No.
And we're talking about this relates to all of us. I think we all, I find myself regularly saying, I don't have time to do that.
Mm.
I don't have time to spend with my friends. I'm too busy doing something else. And then I realize, of course, that all I have is time. The question is, how do I allocate it? And part of what I think, you know, and I want to, most of the people watching this are not in deep poverty. They have some community responsibilities.
Sure.
And such. But there are also things that, I mean, this is directly relevant to how I live my life.
Yeah.
You know, how I allocate one of the resources, which is time, but really all the other resources that are available. This is core to who and what we are.
One of the things that occurs to me as you're saying that is that time is very finite, right? It's limited. Every resource that human beings have is limited. And I rejoice in that because it means that we need to think about how best to allocate those finite resources. If they weren't finite, if they were literally unlimited, we could, as it were, spread ourselves with no thought for better or worse, no allocation needs at all, and then we would miss all the painful joys that go with allocation and, what should I say, in the intensity that goes with the creation of a finite good. Back during the fuel the crisis of the early 1970s, I was invited to the University of Georgia to give a talk, which was in one hall that held a generous amount of people. But at the Coliseum next door, Dolly Parton was there doing her thing. My talk was on Thank God for the Energy Shortage. Her presentation, I think, showed no respect for control of amplitude at all. And I started my talk saying, oh my, to think that you are here to celebrate shortages.
There's no
shortages over there.
At all, on any level.
But I still believe, thank God for the energy shortage. And one of the great things that I preach against, if I may get in my preaching hat, is the development of infinite energy resources such as fusion energy, which I know many environmentalists think would be wonderful because the only byproduct is water and it doesn't put carbon dioxide into the air or the greenhouse gases. And so I think it's wonderful from those points of view. But from the point of view of not having to allocate it, we could pave over the world if we once got fusion energy. And
that's a terrible idea.
I tend to think that Americans, that not Americans only, but humans would tend to do it once we were unleashed from any kind of limitation on our resources.
Why shouldn't
we? I mean, we can do anything.
This is a question of balance, isn't it?
It's a question of balance.
I mean, that's the ecology of...
Which is right at the heart of what the Buddhists say as well, is to find a place that is balanced. My balance will be achieved when I say we'll come back in just a moment for a couple more minutes with Dr. Frederick Farabi with us.